The Clare Byrne Show on News Talk
with Aviva Insurance.
I'm joined now by Armagh GAA legend, current Wicklow football manager, Oisín McConville, for the latest in our What Made Me series. You're very welcome, Oisín.
Thanks for having me.
Are you over? Have you recovered? Wicklow narrowly missed out, moving up a division there. Was it just about a week ago, wasn't it?
It was just over a week ago. It's taken that full week to even start talking to people again. But we move on with Championship now in a week, so that sort of focuses the mind again, you know.
I was thinking about Wicklow. Like, it's a county with a huge population. And you would think that you'd be in a different place with the GAA in Wicklow. What do you think is going on there?
I think I didn't realise the geography, first and foremost, until I went down there. There's a mountain right through the middle of it, and that probably hasn't helped things down through the years. Logistically, it's tough to get guys, but I do think the GAA is going in the right direction now. But I think we're probably 10 years behind everybody else in Leinster. Mm. But I definitely think the work that has gone on in the last probably 6 or 7 years and the work that they continue to do will bear fruit at some stage. So I think they will play a catch-up.
I suppose you've got a very rural part and you've got parts of it then that, you know, I mean, Wicklow people will hate this, but they're considered suburbs of Dublin, you know, like Bray. So you've got that disparity in the county.
You have, and then you've got a lot of other sports. You know, you've got
football, isn't
rugby,
it?
Rugby as well. And so I think they're competing against a lot of other facets that maybe other counties don't have.
Mm-hmm. You're staying on anyway until 2027, is that right, as manager?
that's the plan, and I suppose the county board will decide that, because like it was a disappointment. You know, we expected to get up into Division 3, that didn't happen, and we have a few regrets there, but that's the plan.
Yeah, Division 4 though is notorious, isn't it? I mean, you'd have Leitrim and Longford, they're all hopping off each other, one beating the other. It's just a sticky one to get out of.
It is, and this year probably proved that. Like, going into the last day, there's 8 teams in Division 4 and 7 of them had an opportunity to get promotion. Yeah. So that just shows you how tight it was.
Lottery.
And everybody was beating everybody. And somebody had to miss out. Unfortunately, we were one of them.
Yeah. Management for you, is it all about the game, or is it more than that? When you're at that level, county level, are you involved in the players' lives, or is it just about what happens on the pitch and in training?
Yeah, I think management has taken on a life of its own. When I first went into management, it was a college level, and you weren't seeing a lot of the players, so there wasn't a lot of contact time. And I suppose it really was just what happens on the pitch. But I think when you get to this level, you know, you're looking at the player who's walking into your dressing room. So who's walking into your dressing room? Who have you there? What's the frame of mind? What's going on in the background? How can I get the, you know, how can you get the best out of somebody you have in your dressing room? So a lot of people look to, obviously, fitness, strength, physicality, to get into the skills, tactics, all those things. So from the outside looking in, you think, that's the biggest part of, and I suppose I had a lot of learning to do, because it was my first inter-county job when I went in there 4 years ago. But I think a lot of it is to do with people, individuals, and how to get the best out of them.
So what pressure are you under in your life, in your job, in your college studies? What commutes are you doing? That sort of stuff.
Exactly. How many teams are you playing for? You know, who's looking what from you? And as I say, just having a bit of recognition of, you know, the travel that's involved. How are people actually getting themselves to train, and how much hassle is that? And you're trying to walk around that as best as possible, because you want to keep everybody that you can on board. Because I know there's a lot of players up and down the country who aren't committing into county teams because logistically, families.
Too much.
Yeah, it's a lot.
But it was always that way, wasn't it? I mean, it was like that in your day, wasn't it?
It was, but it's gone on to another level completely. The expectation, what's in it for the player. Do you know what I mean? The abuse, all of those things that probably have come into the game in the last 10 years that I probably wouldn't have sampled. Like, the whole, like, there's a microscope on the game now, And because of the time of year we play it in, it's quite, when it gets to the latter stages of the championship, it's quite isolated. There's not a lot of other things happening.
Oh, it's full focus on the GAA.
Yeah,
I see what you mean. But I mean, you guys would have got plenty of abuse in your day as well, right?
Yeah, but generally that was to your face. Walking down the street, which I felt was a lot easier to deal with.
Fairer way to do it, all right, isn't
it? Yeah, I think so. And I think there is a lot of more pressures now for players that maybe we didn't experience.
Do you encourage them to stay away from social media? Is there any point?
I don't, because I try not to interfere on that side of things, because I'm not on social media. Do you know what I mean? I'm not on any sort of social media, and I've managed to stay away from that. No, I don't. My wife's not on social media. In fact, when the kids first started to go to school, we had to get somebody else, because all the messaging came through Facebook. So we had to get somebody else to just text us and say, listen, school's not on tomorrow whatever. But now it's a lot more, because there's apps and different things.
Trying to get your children to stay off social media. I mean, like, that's
I think that's probably impossible.
A losing battle, isn't it?
It is, yeah. It's just, you know, trying to keep an eye on it as best as possible. And that, to be honest, as a parent, that's probably is one of the biggest worries, is how that affects them.
I have a listener here saying that you're a hero, and I have to say that to your face now, and you have to not blush, but I'm just going to tell you what they say. Not for your numerous GAA successes, but he has personally supported many young GAA players in their gambling struggles. He's a sporting reputation that they admire, and as such has a unique ability to reach them and advise them on how their lives can be better. He's an incredible person, GAA gold in person, which is a lovely tribute. And thanks to that listener. Doing that though, aren't you? You're still helping people with that problem that you went through.
So I'm an ambassador now for gamblingcare.ie, and I suppose as part of that, interventions, trying to help with legislation, regulation, things that in this country are again way behind where they need to be. And I suppose as somebody who's been through it, got a lot of help when I needed it. When I reached out, I mean, people clambered to give me the help that I needed. So I think it's only fair that I give a little bit back.
Was it there at that time to that extent?
Gambling wasn't near the problem at that stage. And the biggest thing for me was there was nobody else really talking about it.
But the help, was the help there when you made that decision?
The help was there, but it wasn't specific to gambling, whereas that help is actually there now. There's a lot of residential treatment centres, family resource centres, helplines website. You know, there's places where you can immediately go. If I was looking for something at that stage, I wouldn't have been able to. Like, I went into Coonwarra for treatment in 2005, came out in 2006, and there was nobody else in that house at that time who was in with a gambling problem. Now, some of them could have been cross-addicted and maybe had gambling as an issue along with alcohol or whatever it was. But yeah, it's more a lot more specific now.
I wonder what's affecting
a lot more people.
It is, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But when you're in there and it's just you, you're the only person in there for gambling, are you going, was there really anything wrong with me here?
Well, initially when I went in, I thought, listen, I don't need to detox. Physically, I'm fine. I'm playing intercounty football. I feel great.
Healthy as a trout.
Yeah, feel great physically. But when people started opening up, that's where the gap was for me, is that I couldn't open up as quick as they could, because they were physically getting better and they were able to share, you know, what was going on in their lives. And I was a little bit hesitant. So it took me a while to come around to that, but like, I was in that bad a place at that time that I was just glad that there was somebody who was going to take some care and was going to help me get to a place that I was desperate to get to, and that was completely away from gambling.
You mentioned how hard it is now. Like, we have the sports channels on all the time in the house, and I'm just looking at them going, my God, are they advertising anything else other than gambling sites and apps with ads that are really attractive to a 12-year-old boy? Like, what hope have they?
And I would have talked to you down through the years, Claire, and I always would have said, I'm hesitant to say that the ads are targeting young people, but I think there's no doubt about it now. You look at your sports heroes, you look at a gambling advertisement, it's something that actually sticks with you because it's so innovative, and I can nearly say that word, but it captures you. It captures you, and I fear for the people out there who are most vulnerable, who are maybe trying to get away from gambling, who are trying to sort out the issues they have, a family member, and it's in your face 24/7. I mean, if you're into sport, which most people, a lot of people, sorry, not most people, a lot of people who gamble are, but we've opened up a whole new demographic to gambling. I mean, the biggest influx of people into Gamblers Anonymous are women now between the ages of 25 and 45.
Right.
It's absolutely huge. So you can see how the how there's obviously a gap in the market as far as they're concerned. And then we've introduced, as I say, a whole new demographic. And because of that, we have so much more issues.
Mm-hmm. I was reading an interview with you last night where you said you don't regret what you've been through, or you wouldn't not go through it, because it has made who you are today.
I think that sounds really strange to people, and would probably sound really strange and annoying to my family as well and the people that love me. But I just think that I had to go through that to get to where I am now. Because when I gambled, I wasn't a very nice person to be around. I just generally, when I look back, I cringe at the arrogance and all of that thing, considering what was going on in the background. And that was a symptom, obviously, of the addiction. But I'd rather have gone through what I've gone through and come out the other side.
Are you like an ex-smoker? Do you hate it now, or do you still feel vulnerable to it?
I don't feel vulnerable to it, but I wouldn't get too cocky and arrogant about it either, because it's something with, it's the monkey that's going to be on my shoulder for the rest of my life. It's up to me to keep it there. Now I have the tools and the knowledge, I suppose, to keep it there, but knowledge and or intelligence or any of those things doesn't get you away from addiction. And I'd still be very, very conscious of doing the right things all the time, not put myself in situations. And I'm 20 years away now, but I just think that because of where I am now, I'd like to think that I could have some sort of influence on how we try and temper the situation we're in now, because it's like a runaway train, realistically. We live in the Wild West as far as gambling is concerned, and we have a new regulator in, and hopefully within the next 12 to 18 months, things will improve dramatically for the most vulnerable.
What needs to improve? What could be done?
If you were giving me a utopia for the one thing that I would like to change, I started gambling at 14. I was already addicted at 18. The majority of people that I see have started before the age of 18. You're not really making an informed decision, a mature decision at 18 years of age. So even if we could do that, to get the get people to 18 before they start gambling. And then there's a lot of stuff around the advertising and I suppose enticements for people, or reasons why people would start gambling or think it was a good idea to start gambling. And I would just love to see that that we as a nation would look at the advertisement and be able to counteract some of that with some of the other messages that are going unheard.
Mm-hmm. I'm just struck by what you said about the number of women now who are problem gamblers. That's new, really, since online, because traditionally women probably wouldn't have been going into the shop on the main street, right?
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's very difficult for a woman to hold her hand up and say, listen, I have a gambling problem. There's still a massive stigma. There's a stigma in gambling in general, but I think with women, there's a huge stigma there, and it's very difficult for women to get themselves into treatment, even leave the household to go to residential treatment.
All sorts of issues
But there are a lot of people, women, who are holding their hands up.
Oisín, I could talk to you for ages. Thanks so much. You'll have to come back. Lovely to see you. Thanks so much. That's Oisín McConville, and thank you very much for listening.
The Clare Byrne Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekday mornings at 9 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.